Fairfield County has the 11th highest number of railway injuries and deaths in the country. That's according to data from the Federal Rail Administration. The county has had close to 700 railway injuries or deaths. That number has declined each year in Connecticut since tracking the data started a decade ago, but pedestrian collisions are on the rise. Jim Cameron is the founder of the Commuter Action Group.
There has been a definite upswing in the past year. Hardly a week or two goes by without another passenger fatality on the main line at Metro North.
Two fatal railway collisions happened on Metro North lines just this month. A man was struck and killed by a train near Coscob Station in Greenwich, and the next day, another man was killed near the Stamford Station. Railway deaths tracked by the Federal Rail Administration include passengers, contractors, and trespassers on rail property without permission. You are listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut-New York region. National Guard members can now unionize thanks to a lawsuit out of Connecticut. It's been 10 years since the state repealed the death penalty, and one of the most common products in American medicine cabinets has roots right here in our region. Those stories and more to come. I'm Sabrina Garone. The Department of Justice has given a green light to National Guard members to unionize when they're on state active duty. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports on the result of a case that began in Connecticut.
The Justice Department reached a settlement with plaintiffs in Connecticut that will allow unions across the country to support National Guard members. Josh Lefko is with Yale Law School's Veteran Legal Services Clinic.
Guard members can go ahead and start setting up unions. The work now is organizing, ensuring that Guard members know that they have the right to organize. And, you know, as a part of the settlement, the Department of Justice have reached out to the 54 National Guard bureaus, letting them know of their legal position in this case.
National Guard members have been organizing in Texas, where they were sent as part of Governor Greg Abbott's Operation Lone Star, a border operation directed against immigration. Guard members in Texas say they've faced long hours and poor conditions. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
It's been a decade since Connecticut repealed the death penalty. Today, a New York-based nonprofit hosted a webinar with legal experts from the state to discuss how ending the death penalty shaped justice reform in Connecticut. WSHU's Mike Lyle reports.
Equal Justice USA provided a platform for those who spoke on why Connecticut ending the death penalty led to broad changes in the system. Under former Governor Dan Malloy, Connecticut became the 17th state to abolish the practice for future cases. Mike Lawler is a former state representative who served in the Malloy administration as the Undersecretary for Criminal Justice Policy. He says Connecticut has seen some success since dropping the death penalty, but more needs to be done.
If I could wave a magic wand, I would eliminate money bail, because I think that is a major contributor both to racial disparities and racial injustice, but also just to dysfunction in the criminal justice system. And I think that's sort of on the radar screen of the policymakers in Hartford, and hopefully that discussion really heats up in the years to come.
Lawler was referring to a pair of murder cases that took place in 2007, one that involved the Pettit family home invasion in Cheshire, and another that involved a black teen from New Haven. The trials took place at the same time, but it was Pettit's home invasion that got more local and national media attention. Victoria Coward is the mother of the teen. She says that is what fueled her frustration with the state's justice system.
I just felt like there was a lot of racism going on at that time, separating the urban community from the suburban. And I'm like, a life is a life, point blank period. I lost my son, he lost the family, but my son is just as important as his family.
Mike Lawler added that since then, Connecticut has become a national leader in criminal justice reform, such as reducing mass incarceration and improving public safety. Mike Lyle, WSHU News.
Coming up, how witch hazel made its way into just about everything after the industry got its start in Connecticut. More on that after headlines and a message from our supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
New Canaan, Connecticut's Animal Control Department warns residents to check their security cameras after a cougar was sighted over the weekend. They say a couple observed a large cat with a long, thick tail jumping over their 4-foot fence in their backyard on Sunday. There have been 6 other presumed cougar sightings in the last year in New Canaan. 2 reports were from March and 4 were from last August. New York's Board of Regents will reinstate state standardized exams next month. That's despite pleas from lawmakers, parents, and students to cancel the regents like they did for the past 2 years due to the pandemic. The state will instead lower the score needed to pass to 50. High schoolers needed a score of above 65 to be eligible for graduation before that. The mayor of New Britain, Connecticut, Aaron Stewart, says one fire official has been fired and 7 other firefighters have been demoted. This is the result of an investigation into the apparent drug-related death of an off-duty firefighter in his home in January. 6 other firefighters have resigned since that death. A criminal investigation is ongoing, but no charges have been filed. The mayor says she wants random drug testing for city fire personnel. Take a look through your medicine cabinet. From skin cream to body wash and deodorant, many of these products share an ingredient, witch hazel. And the witch hazel industry has roots in the Connecticut River Valley. WSHU's Davis Donovan brings us the story as part of his podcast, Off the Path.
Witch hazel comes from a small tree, really more of a shrub. It's light brown with green leaves and yellow flowers. You might see it growing in clusters in the woods anywhere in the eastern United States. But historian Melissa Josefiak says it's especially common around her hometown of Essex.
In these swampy areas, witch hazel grows really well. Even if you prune it all the way down, it will grow back to its full height in 7 years. You're making the most out of a nuisance shrub, is what we say. And we've got a lot of it in the Connecticut River Valley.
Witch hazel has been a staple of self-care since before Europeans came to America. The Mohegan tribe in Connecticut used it to treat the common cold, eye and skin conditions, muscle aches, and a bunch of other ailments.
So in a nutshell, you could say witch hazel is a soothing salve.
Melissa says witch hazel is an unusual plant because it blooms in the winter.
So to Native Americans and to the European settlers, it was considered almost magical because that's a time when most plants are dead.
The most basic method was to gather up the branches and flowers and carry them back to town in bushels, then grind them up and boil them to make herbal salves.
But when you take those branches, especially as they're blooming, and you chop them up and you distill them or put them through water and you steam them, they produce an extract.
And that extract is what ends up on drugstore shelves around the world today. A local missionary first pioneered the formula in 1846 and sold it in Essex. Within a few decades, a local entrepreneur named T.N. Dickinson took over the witch hazel market and built a factory on the railroad tracks in the center of town. The business got its start in the snake oil era, when newspapers sold all sorts of weird remedies, some not very effective.
And they are clever enough, savvy enough, marketable enough to take it from the snake oil salesman pitch into something that you need through advertising, through careful product placement. This is something that every American household should have, witch hazel in your medicine cabinet.
Melissa flips through a huge scrapbook of newspaper clippings from the first half of the 20th century. Some are ads for Dickinson's witch hazel with a picture of a cartoon witch for marketing. That's a misnomer because the name has nothing to do with witches. It comes from an old English word that means soft and pliable, like the branches. But of course, a clever marketing campaign can mean everything.
But the witch conveys the idea of magic, of a certain healing power. It's an approachable witch, if you want to look at it that way, and she could solve your family's ills with this astringent. Dickinson claimed, or witch hazel could claim, that it would cure everything from acne to cancer at certain points.
A 1914 newspaper article described the traditional method of gathering witch hazel.
Witch hazel choppers require no complicated equipment. Rough, warm clothing and a small axe, well sharpened, cover the case. Oxen are used for hauling the brush since they work much better in the swamp than horses would.
Harvesters still venture out into the woods, only now the oxen have been replaced by trucks and heavy machinery. I went out into the woods with a harvester for American Distilling late last fall when the witch hazel plants were blooming.
It's easy to pick out in the fall because it flowers in the fall with scraggly yellow petals.
So you cut them down just with the chainsaw?
Yep. Like I say, stack them in piles. I've got a grapple on the back of my tractor. I can pick the piles up and skid it out to a landing where I chip it.
Bob Haynes picks up bundles of witch hazel and shoves them into the wood chipper attached to his truck, two or three big bundles at a time. The chips make their way to East Hampton, Connecticut, the headquarters of American Distilling. That's a company that now makes the original T.N. Dickinson products, plus a whole lot more. Vice President Brian Jackowitz leads me onto the factory floor. Empty bottles roll down assembly lines as workers man giant machines. Big metal vats line the walls.
It smells like witch hazel. Witch hazel permeates every pore of this building. It's like a woodsy, earthy smell.
But it also has the whiff of a distillery because of the process used to make it an astringent. It's preserved with 14% grain alcohol.
So as you see on this line, this is our cosmetic line. We're running our Dickinson's Hydrating Toner. That's our alcohol-free witch hazel product that hydrates the skin and removes excess oils and impurities.
On another line, bottles that will make their way into pharmaceuticals. Witch hazel ends up in sunscreen, acne pads, anti-itch cream, anti-aging cream, and just about anything else you can imagine putting on your skin.
Here we have our Humphreys organic witch hazel line.
That's the one my girlfriend uses. I recognize that logo.
The Humphreys?
Yeah,
the
I recognize Humphreys the lady one? With the yeah.
That's great. That brand goes back to 1854.
Witch hazel became really popular with the organic natural skincare movements that took off in the 1970s.
I mean, what is more organic, local, native than witch hazel, right? It literally grows in the woodlands of New England.
The business has come a long way from the early operation of T.N. Dickinson. Dickinson's sons ran competing businesses, and in the 1990s, they were brought together by Brian Jackowitz's father under the American Distilling label.
And, my father had the vision to say, you know, look, there's only a few companies making genuine witch hazel in the world, okay, and I could probably produce it better, faster, cheaper. That's his little saying, better, faster, cheaper than anybody. And I figure out how to automate this.
Brian says he's proud of his family business and all those familiar bottles still found on the shelves of American medicine cabinets.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or catch your favorite programs anytime on WSHU.org. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing this podcast with your friends. I'm Sabrina Garone. We'll talk tomorrow.